Welcome to the Security Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Schwindiger and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a lovely five-star review and follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter.
We're here to talk about some recent news headlines. Hopefully provide some insight and analysis, practical application that you can use to take back to your office and protect your organization.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
And I think you can pay a lot less than $20K a week for me.
That's what she said. Or, let's be fair, that's what he said. Is that the politically correct way of saying that now?
I think it's more, that's what it said.
That's what they said. That doesn't feel as funny. I don't laugh at that. Huh.
Matthew here. This was supposed to be one news episode, but it went so long we ended up not having time to record our topic and are splitting this one into two. Hope you enjoy listening. Thanks.
So the first article we're going to talk about is the leaked hacker log shows weakness of Russia's cyber proxy ecosystem.
Yeah, this seems a real well-written article, right? With a lot of important information.
Oh, yeah. You, I don't know how businesses can survive having not read this article. This comes to us from CSO Online. And in case you couldn't tell that, Matt has already started in with the sarcasm as far as this article.
I just wanted it to right from the beginning so nobody thought that this was being taken terribly seriously.
I want to set the stage. So the article says that, you know, recently released documents from the Conti group, so those chat logs we talked about a couple of weeks ago, can provide clues on how Western governments and CISOs can better combat the Russian proxy threat. And that's not really accurate because there's virtually nothing in here that's really going to help you out.
I remember when we were discussing this on Wednesday, I was trying to skim through it, looking for it. And I got to the end. And I was like, really? It was like the last three paragraphs was all the actual part about combating Russian proxy threat actors.
And even that didn't have a lot of meat in it.
Nope.
But it starts off with kind of explaining that, you know, governments or states, as he puts it, have used proxy actors to do cyber operations. And the reason or the action that they take here on behalf of the governments are like, harassing, subverting. I like this, burglaring foreign competitors. I like that. And shaping favorable conditions without risking escalation. So basically the same things that a state could do, but they're having these cutouts do it for them, which allows them a degree of plausible deniability, which makes complete sense.
Yeah, this is not something that's new at all. We've talked about this for years in terms of Russian and Chinese and North Korean actors, right?
Right. Yeah, it's not surprising to anybody that folks are participating in this or the reason that they do this. One of the reasons that they specify it here was that the criminal organizations may have specific coding talent or infrastructure that the state doesn't have, which I thought was kind of interesting as far as, you know, why would that be, considering that the state is supposedly with unlimited resources? It seems more like them taking advantage of an already existing infrastructure rather than building out their own, maybe. And of course, like I said, this is all based on the Conti chat logs. And there are a couple of things in here that he mentioned about the Conti group that I thought were interesting that we didn't really get from the four-part piece that Krebs had done. And one of those things was that Conti presents itself as a legitimate company to its staff. And I thought that was an interesting statement that, you know, perhaps these people think they're working for a legitimate company versus a hacking group. It's like, how could they be conducting ransomware operations and the staff not realize that what they're doing is not legit? It doesn't make sense to me.
Yep, I completely agree. I can't. So let's think about that. Maybe the HR people might think it's legitimate, but everybody else, like if you're designing the ransomware and coding the ransomware, you're definitely not. If you're doing the intrusions, you're definitely not. If you're the people that are interacting with the companies and blackmailing them for the money, you're definitely not. Unless it was presented as we're a penetration testing company and this is our penetration testing.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. That's a stretch, but.
Yeah. Well,
that's the first you could have for it.
Yeah, I agree.
But something else they pointed out, which I didn't get from the chat logs either, but it makes sense that this would be the case, that the Conti group has a customer service infrastructure which helps the victims pay efficiently. That was excellently designed. And I would think if you're making $180 million a year, you probably have invested quite a bit in your customer service portal or whatever, but I mean, exactly what that is.
Can you imagine the Yelp reviews if your customer service is poor? Like, we paid $18 million and they didn't even decrypt.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that you need to have a Yelp for the criminal enterprises. I mean, this is a must have, really.
This is a luxury ransomware service, and companies expect a certain degree of service with their ransoming.
Right. I mean, where did I see this recently? I can't remember if this is one of the other articles we'll get to later or something I read somewhere else where they're saying that, man, I don't even remember the number now, but a certain percentage of ransomware victims pay and still can't decrypt.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing kills your business faster than not being able to deliver. It's the same for criminals as it is for, you know, as real businesses.
Right. But without the Yelp for criminal enterprises, you don't know how good they are. And that's the real problem. You know, when Citibank gets ransomware, they should be able to go to Yelp on the dark web and say, this is who I've been ransomwared by. And yes, I was able to fully decrypt my stuff to get 3 stars or 4 stars or 5 stars or whatever. You know, they helped me along the whole way, helped me get my Bitcoin, and, you know, that's polite, courteous customer service all the way. And those guys who are the fly-by-nights and, you know, don't decrypt your stuff, they only get 1 or 2 victims because their Yelp reviews are terrible.
Yep.
I mean, exactly. This is a win for both sides.
I agree.
All right, but moving on. One of the things that he talks about, as long as these people act within the Russian IP space, and this is something he mentioned, but for their allies, that Russia will not bother. Because obviously, if I almost guarantee you that you don't have ransomware groups in Belarus attacking Russia with any kind of ransomware, or you don't have Russians attacking Belarus with ransomware because they're tight partners. So it's really Russian IP space or their allies. And whether people realize it or not, this is the exact same truth that you see on the other side. If you're in the United States, as long as you don't attack the United States or one of its allied countries, you can get away with the exact same activity that the Russian ransomware crews can get away with.
Yep, almost certainly.
Because I've actually known people not do ransomware, but actually hack boxes in China as practice. And the FBI didn't go busting down their door.
That's Bob, right? That's the naming convention that we're supposed to use, Bob?
Well, defensive security already used Bob. I think we'll probably have to use somebody else.
No, that's why I was using it. So I was trying okay. I'm trying to build a consistent...
It's still Bob.
Still Bob.
Well, everybody knows Bob, I guess. That's true.
Everybody knows a Bob.
And something else he mentions in here is that the Conti Group supposedly gives political elites a cut of what they earn. You know, this is one of the main problems I have with this whole article, is he makes these kind of statements with no, you know, footnote, no reference, no link to any kind of documentation that indicates that this is true. Because while it sounds plausible, I have not read anything about any evidence which shows that there are political elites which are taking a cut from these ransomware actors. And it just bothers me that they can make these kind of blanket statements with no qualifying or backing up information for it. And it's more like propaganda than it is informative for the consumers of these articles or papers.
Yeah, that would be actually a huge accusation. If he knew specific political elites and oligarchs that were both supporting and being supported by these criminal outfits like Conti, like that would be a national level scandal. It's weird of him to make this accusation without anything to back it up.
Yeah. You imagine if they cracked open, they actually had like the Conti or ransomware groups, like accounting books or whatever, and said, oh, well, here's Sergey and he gets this percentage or this many Bitcoin, you know, for this hack or whatever. But he also said that, you know, the purpose of these hacking groups is to subvert the Western-led world order in more politically relevant fashion. I don't know, just the language in here kills me. You know, so these people are spreading disinformation, stealing intellectual property and private data from valuable targets, help compromise the infrastructure in countries like the United States and Canada, either directly or under the instruction of state security forces, or indirectly as providers of tools and infrastructure use. And these are two other suppositions that I'd like to see some references for, to say that there's that the state is directing their actions. You have proof of that. And second, that the state is leveraging the existing hacker infrastructure. So basically, you know, Conti builds out their platform, you know, and when we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, you know, they have VPNs, they have infrastructure built for conducting ransomware. So they build this and then they just give accounts to, you know, Russian intelligence services or whoever to leverage their infrastructure. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense either. And, you know, they are there fees involved in that and everything.
So just that's a lot actually of
conjecture.
Yeah. But that actually is kind of, can you imagine trying to track down a government actor that is using Conti as their sock puppet? So, all right. So for example, because when we first started discussing this, I was thinking to myself like, oh yeah, the Conti ransomware group, their ransomware is helping to bring down the Western led world order for sure. But it did occur to me, what if when they break into a system, and this is completely conjecture, there's no proof of this whatsoever, but what if when they break into a system, they have to go check with a handler from the government? And then based on the instructions there, they then like hand over their access to the government to perform espionage. And then the ones where the government's like, oh, we don't care about them, then they ransomware them. So I'm not saying that's happening, but that would make a really interesting cover for espionage.
It would make, I mean, if you were to go through that, unless the government didn't want to provide the gang the information, then they could provide them with attributes for what they want. To say, yeah, if you break into this type of organization, this is the data we're looking for, or you're going to give us a copy of everything from these types of organizations, and you know, you just have to do data exfil. So in that aspect, they're acting as full proxies for, you know, the state. If they are not directing their targets, you know, the state says attack here, attack there, and so on. But something else that's made me think of is that, what's this say for attribution? When you talk about state organizations using hacker-led infrastructure, so at that point, they're not really proxies anymore because they aren't the ones doing the work. They've just leased their infrastructure to the state organizations.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more likely that, you know, I mean, this is just kind of the way that I'm thinking about it, is that, you know, if you're in the Russian government and you have these hacker organizations within your country, that you've given them a wink and a nod, say, as long as you don't mess around in, you know, us or allies workspace, you can do whatever you want. Really, what they're doing is just saying, well, we'll just let these guys act as agents of chaos, and you know, whatever possible fringe benefits get from it, we get from it, and not actually using them directly to benefit them. Yeah, if you know what I mean. So it's kind of like, well, we're just not going to interrupt these agents of chaos, rather than being active directions for these agents. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, this was totally and wholly unsubstantiated. I have no idea if that's what's happening, but it is an interesting supposition, even if he provides it without any evidence whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's complete bullshit, to be honest.
And frankly, the first one you mentioned there, the help spreading disinformation, I don't think the criminals are helping them do that. Like the other ones make sense, like stealing intellectual property and private data, they can sell that. There's a monetary driver there. Compromising infrastructure, there's a monetary driver. You can ransom it or you can sell the access. Those make sense in that, you know, criminal groups are doing those and maybe the governments might push them in a little direction, give them a nudge somewhat. But I don't think the criminal groups are helping spread disinformation. There's no money in that unless they're being paid to do it.
Yeah, additionally, I mean, it's wasted infrastructure to do that. I mean, it doesn't take a lot to perform that function. So why bother having someone else do it when you could do it yourself?
Yep, that makes sense.
So he continues on with starting to talk about the Russian invasion of the Ukraine. And apparently, and they had posted a message after the invasion started saying they fully supported the Russian government's actions. And then a short time later, they retracted that message and replaced it one that was more, I don't know, Midland, I guess you'd say, where they say, well, we support the Russian government, but this war is bad, you know, kind of trying to walk the middle line there with that. And that indicates, you know, when I was thinking about it, it's like there's two halves that, you know, one half, if they were actual Russian proxies, there's no way they would bite the hand that feeds them by walking back their first statement. It doesn't make any sense. Whereas if they're agents of chaos and they have employees, or, you know, if you will, that have mixed feelings or are Ukrainian, then maybe they want to, just like any company, and they want to ensure that their employees are totally against the totally against the organization, right?
Just the, so, just the Russian equivalent of being woke is not providing full support to the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
Yeah, kind of like that. Exactly. That's exactly how I was kind of thinking about it.
That's funny.
That's why they really walked back that statement saying, so that indicates that whoever, you know, and it may not even been the leadership, to be honest with you, that managing that page. It could have been a mid-level guy that, hey, he's responsible for this page and he updated it of his own volition. And maybe the management said, hey, well, you really need to walk that back because we have some Ukrainian guys working for us or whatever.
Three of our coders are Ukrainians.
Right. So that, I think that actually kind of throws cold water on the idea that these guys are fully in bed with the Russian government as far as being proxies for them. And then he references, you know, how we got this information to begin with the @ConteLeaks Twitter account. And he seems to indicate that the employee base was opposed to Putin's invasion, which is backed up by that walking back of the statement. But in the same, at the in section, he says that there was a Ukrainian researcher that infiltrated the Conti group, which created the Twitter account. So I'm not sure. It seems like you can't really have both. Either it was a disgruntled employee or it was a researcher who infiltrated the Conti group. It's not both.
Hmm.
So that's something else that's where this guy leads to my idea that this guy hadn't really thought this whole thing through on his supposition here. And later in the article, he's continuing on with the Ukraine invasion thing. He says, and this is a quote from the article, "This confusion was addressed recently in an all emails announcement in which a deputy asked members to take a couple of months vacation so that Conti can deal with the fallout of the invasion and reposition itself to build a revenue flow back." Now, this is a reference to a text that was sent out from a Twitter handle or a Jabber handle called Francis. And in that statement from Francis, here's what he wrote, or she, I guess Francis could be a she. "We have a difficult situation. Too much attention to the companies from outside resulted in the fact that the boss has apparently decided to lay low. There have been many leaks, post New Year's receptions, and many other circumstances that incline us to take some time off and wait for the situation to calm down." Now, in the first quote from the guy who wrote the article, it specifically states in there that they told these people to take time off because of fallout from the invasion. But that quote that I just read was posted on the 21st of February, according to the chat logs. That is 3 days before the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which leads to my supposition that this guy is completely full of shit and a terrible researcher.
Wow. They had it all out there. Yeah, it's they're talking about the leaks and they're talking about the other circumstances. They're probably doing the same thing. They've talked about this group does this a couple times, right? They lay low, they fire a bunch of people, they hire a bunch of new people, and they pop back up as somebody else.
Right. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago about how there are gaps in the chat log, and it kind of relates to situations where they've had some challenges that they've had to deal with.
Yeah. Yep. And that makes total sense here. They've brought too much heat. They got too famous. They made too much money. Now it's time to chill out for a bit.
Yeah. They've hit the wrong group or the wrong target or whatever, and they need to, you know, back off for a minute. Another supposition he makes in here is that criminal gangs close connections to the Russian state likely flow through the intelligence community, which, you know, more supposition about basically saying that these guys are being handled by Russian intelligence. And he made another statement here that I had really heard about, which is to say I'm not completely up on the news from what's going on in the war, but said there have been purges in response to intelligence missteps at the outset of the Ukrainian invasion, which has led to this a viable Russian cyber proxy being temporarily neutralized in relation to that and other operational imperatives. So basically combining the two, the previous statement about laying low and some kind of purge within the Russian intelligence is basically knocked the Conti ransomware group offline as far as conducting attacks.
That's ridiculous. Conti was not, I'm sure that they had the Russian government's like tacit approval. They're like, yeah, keep hitting the Americans, keep stealing money from the Americans, F those guys. But that doesn't mean that, you know, the government, the Russian government was telling them where to hit and who to hit. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's a wink and a nod. They get away with this. They don't hide themselves as much as they would if they were in a more, you know, where they were expected to get snatched up by law enforcement. I think they'd be much more careful. Because we talked about this a few weeks ago, where they mentioned working with a somebody in law enforcement about possibly being investigations being brought back up, you know, against the group. And I would think that, you know, if they were tight with Russian intelligence, they would not have even sweated that.
Yep. And there was another group that they arrested several members of, but now that makes me wonder if they were actually members of that group. Was it Reval?
Right.
I mean, technically they could have arrested some random people.
Oh, and just said they were Reval?
Yeah.
Well, I guess that would, we'll just have to watch for the future though, because as we, you know, we talked about before with this group, that they've reused their source code and stuff in their tools. So if a new group shows up using the same source code, same TTPs,
no, but hold on. Remember, Conti had like 60 people. Like for the Reval one, they arrested, they arrested more than a dozen members and confiscated millions in cash. Like maybe the people in charge of it sacrificed a dozen of the low-level employees. And they were like, this is going to take the heat off us. Here's some people. Yeah. Take them. And then they kept like, you know, their senior coders and their central organization.
So right. Could have been Reval. That the arrests were not relevant.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
So they can say, well, we arrested Reval, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, who is Reval? If they just pop up under a new name, they didn't really arrest Reval, did they?
No, they really didn't.
So why does this matter? It doesn't. This guy's full of crap. But what he's suggesting, the whole point of his entire article, what does he say? How Western governments and CISOs can better combat Russian proxy threat actors really boils down to three very short things. You can sanction their sugar daddies, if there are such things. You can infiltrate them, and you can get your hygiene, you know, get your stuff in order, performing typical IT hygiene stuff. That's really what his entire article boiled down to, those three things. And the first one is completely supposition if they even have any sugar daddies to sanction, regardless of the fact that, you know, sanctioning people is tantamount to theft without due process of law.
Yeah, because that's what we were talking about. Because we were discussing, I thought that due process only applied to citizens. And you told me that it does not. And I looked it up and you were correct.
Right. It's persons.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to be a citizen of the U.S. to get the protections of U.S. due process and other rights.
Right. As executed by the U.S. government.
Yeah. Oh, that's fair. Yeah. Russians still do due process.
Well, they have their own kind of process, I'm sure. I'm not sure exactly what that is. With the infiltratum, that's kind of taking the key from the Conti supposition there that they were infiltrated by somebody. And it's possible. I think it's more likely that they ticked this guy off for some reason who was already an employee, because if you recall from our previous conversation, there were several instances where they thought they'd been infiltrated before and they started firing a bunch of people for that reason. So it's not too far-fetched to think that, you know, they have been infiltrated in the past and that's exactly what happened this time. And of course, performing good cyber hygiene, if you will, that's a no-brainer as far as that goes. So you didn't really learn anything new from this entire article that this guy wrote here.
But we sure spent a long time talking about it.
Well, I do enjoy bitching about this kind of stuff, though.
That's fair.
Just obvious. But one of the things that, you know, we kind of touched on earlier is he closed out the article by saying that blended political and business identities of proxies like Conti make him uniquely weak. And I'm not sure exactly why it makes them uniquely weak as opposed to specifically weak, but it sounds like when you blend political and business identity together, it is the same kind of crap we're seeing in corporate America with the woke bullshit, where, you know, you have to both satisfy your customers and some kind of woke ideology at the same time. It seems very similar to that kind of concept.
For our second article, I have a article about the Lapsus Data Extortion Group, and we are going to blaze through this because everybody and their mother are talking about Lapsus, and I don't know, there's a ton of stuff that we can add to the conversation. So this is going to be like a short 5-minute bit. So Lapsus is a fairly new group to the scene, first making a splash in December 2021. Despite being fairly new, they have made headlines for hacking a number of high-profile targets, including NVIDIA, Samsung, Vodafone, Microsoft, Okta, and there was one that came out earlier this week, but I don't remember what it was. The reason it's notable is they are not using a bunch of 0 days, although they've been advertising to buy them, but they're using fairly low-tech methods of breaking in, such as social engineering, SIM swapping, and hiring insiders. That is what I really want to talk about, because that's the one I find most interesting. And frankly, we talked about the, several months ago about like the Nigerian guy who was trying to hire an insider but got caught really fast. Well, I don't know if these guys saw it or if they were planning on doing it separately, but they took that and they ran with it. They advertised to buy credentials for employees and or contractors in their Telegram channel and in Reddit. There was a post in /r/Verizon that was screenshotted in this article. Very subtle, offering $20,000 a week to provide access to users' credentials if they were in certain companies. And I checked their Telegram channel today, and they've got 57,000 subscribers in their Telegram channel.
Yeah, I think that $20,000 a week from Verizon is basically saying, hey, we need an insider to provide us constant access to do SIM swapping.
Yep. Yep, that was what they were looking for from the companies. And this is kind of what we talked about before, because we talked about SIM swapping a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking about how it was so complicated about how you'd have to have access in the phone company to like match up who owns the phone number and all that stuff. Well, this is how apparently they do it. They paid somebody in Verizon who has access to it $20,000 a week to get that access.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the ad says, this is low risk for you. Saying, oh, don't worry, you will not get caught, basically.
So for SIM swapping, I have to imagine they have the audit records to show that when those SIMs were swapped. So yeah, the person in Verizon that does it is 100% caught and fired and probably charged as well. But I haven't seen any news about that.
Yeah, I'd like to see some follow-up on that. I would be interested to find out. Because you know what I was thinking about was this. You know, depending on what the logs look, you know, so if they call up their guy and write and say, hey, I need you to swap this SIM, or maybe they're even getting that guy to feed them whose SIM that they want to swap with. I don't know. But anyway, they contact the guy, say, hey, swap the SIM. If he swaps it, they do their 2FA for whatever they're doing. And then he swaps it back. Who's going to know that that was even necessary to look at that? You know, to see if he had SIM swapped. You know what I mean?
No, you're right. The company that was then hacked would have to report it to Verizon that the SIM was swapped. And then Verizon would have to go, look, you're right. I imagine because since most companies don't really talk to each other for a hack, it would happen when the government was involved and the FBI was involved. And then the FBI would be like, how did they get in? There was two factor. And then the FBI would go to Verizon and be like, hey, tell me about this.
Yeah, because I think what would have to happen is that, you know, whatever account you're talking about, they would have to say, okay, here's the log which indicates that the money was transferred out or what have you. Let's look at the authentication for whoever logged in to make that transaction and say, well, it was a legitimate login, legitimate credentials. They did not change the phone number to which the 2FA was sent to. So it seems to be the legitimate person that logged in to do this. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have to be able to go to the person would say, well, I never logged in to do that. And at that point, it's almost a matter of, well, do you believe them or not? Because, you know, you kind of bring that into, well, maybe they're just lying about that and they're stealing their own money or trying to claim that the money was stolen from them for some other reason. Maybe they could say, oh, well, I didn't do that transaction. They'll have that money and then they'll get reimbursed for that or something along those lines. And at that point, when you've got do you believe the person or not? Then you go to the phone company and say, okay, did any transactions take place around the SIM for that person's phone during that time frame? And hopefully the logs are there that are going to indicate that's what happened, that the SIM was swapped and then swapped back.
Yeah. Hmm. All right. And frankly, the other discussion point that I really wanted to make here is that these were all teenagers. Like apparently the leader was 17 years old. I have a 17-year-old
alleged kid.
And
alleged.
Wow. Alleged. Yeah. Let me just say that my 17-year-old kid is not this industrious. He is not making millions of dollars doing various crime.
Well, maybe he is. He's just holding out on you.
I'd be like, you're helping pay the rent, buddy. and you better just be hacking Russian websites.
Here's a list of the United States allies. Do not hack any of these people.
You know, actually, though, that was part of their problem, right? They were in the UK and they were hacking American companies.
Yep.
If they were hacking Chinese or other non-allied countries, like, they'd have been in much better shape.
Yep. Make a note.
Make a note.
You know, and I was thinking, you know, when I was thinking about the whole time-based SIM swap thing, you know, I'm wondering if the phone companies are doing any kind of monitoring of SIM swapping now with intrusion, you know, with their security tools, looking at the logs for their SIMs to look for swaps that look weird. You know, if you have this one person that does a SIM swap and then it gets swapped back, maybe you trigger an alert or something like that. Because I think this is one of those instances with the SIM swapping, at least, that the phone companies could be helping out in doing detection of potentially nefarious SIM swaps.
Yeah, that's something that probably shouldn't happen very often, right? Generally speaking, the only time you do a SIM swap is if your phone's broken and you need to get a new phone.
Right. So you wouldn't expect it to swap back unless the guy says, oh, well, I lost it and then I found it and I needed to swap back. But that one, in this situation, I would expect the SIM swap to be, you know, for a short period of time at like 2 o'clock in the morning when the actual owner is not going to notice it.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm done with this.
And that's all I had to say about that.
Well, that looks like that's all the articles we have for today. Thank you for joining us. Follow us at Serengeti Sec on Twitter and subscribe on your favorite podcast app.